Good morning, and welcome to the 2019 Namsys Investor Update. My name is Catherine, and I will be your conference moderator for today's call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. We will be facilitating a brief question-and-answer session towards the end of the presentation. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded for replay purposes. I would now like to turn the presentation over to our host for today's call, Barry Sparks, CEO. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Catherine. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Namsys' second investor update call and website. The company's latest financial results were issued on September 24th and are available on SEDAR. The purpose of the call today is to update investors on the company's operations. Before we get started, please be advised that the information discussed today is current as of our latest financial results, unless otherwise indicated. The comments made on today's call may contain forward-looking information. This information is by its nature, subject to risks and uncertainties, and as such, actual results may differ materially from the views and expectations expressed. Some of the statements we will be making could be construed as forward-looking or made pursuant to the safe harbor provisions of the applicable Canadian securities laws. We will indicate forward-looking statements by using words such as except, will, should, model, intend, believe, and similar expressions. Also, currency amounts discussed today on today's call are in Canadian dollars, unless otherwise stated. A replay of this call will be available on the namsys.com website within 24 hours of the time the call is over. The presenters today are really, there's only one presenter. He is our President and Chief Operating Officer, Jason Siemens, and myself. This is probably as much information as I'll give you about me, but a question-and-answer session, as Catherine mentioned before, will follow the conclusion of the formal presentation. So at this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Jason Siemens. Jason?
Thanks, Barry, and thanks, everyone, for joining us today. I'd like to start by talking a little bit about our mission statement as an introduction. First, we recognize that cash is under pressure from credit and debit. Every statistic shows that cash is static or in decline worldwide, but it remains a legitimate payment method. It has several unique advantages, including privacy, durability, and settlement and par, which really means that cash transactions are unique and are instantaneous. There's no middleman, and there's no transaction fees. But we also know that cash is more expensive and labor-intensive than card payments, and those costs don't correlate with the amount of cash. So it doesn't matter if a store's cash sales are $500 or $5,000. The cost to manually handle it is the same. Likewise, the cost to transport and process it stays the same regardless of the value of the deposit. So if cash use is declining but not disappearing and costs are fixed, that means that the per transaction costs of the cash payments are rising. And Namsys is focused on delivering technology that reduces that fixed cost. And we want to make the payments, cash payments, less expensive and more competitive. And with that, let's do a quick review of our product suite. So we have different products for each stage in the cash cycle, including payment, transportation, and settlement. And starting with retailers, our software helps stores balance their employees and cash registers, provision cash and coin for change, and accelerate the flow of funds into their bank account. And this is done in two ways, via our Cirion banking application, as well as through our Cirion Smart Safe and Recycler monitoring application. And for those that don't know, Smart Safes and Recyclers are hardware devices that operate in stores and automate the collection or storage of cash. And our Cirion Smart Safe application integrates with those hardware devices to collect data from the stores. Our software then helps cash and transit companies track pickups and deliveries and optimize the routes that those trucks take. And this can result in significant fuel and time and labor savings. And then finally, when the cash gets to the bank, our software helps banks and cash processors balance those deposits and fulfill the cash needs of their branches, ATMs, and retail stores, retail customers. All of our systems integrate together. They'll talk to one another, and as well as work with other systems that are in place, like accounting systems, customer management systems, et cetera, to deliver even greater value to our users. And together, our applications record and report billions of dollars in transactions each month to give you an idea of the scope of their use. So we'll give you a little bit of an update on the revenue mix. And you know, as Barry said, we're using our Q3 versus Q3 results or the last four quarters in some cases, and we'll make note of each. But the breakdown for each one of the products is we'll start with the Cerion SmartSafe application. So on a year-over-year basis, that recurring revenue from SmartSafe monitoring has grown 18%. It now makes up 68% of revenue. Currency Controller grew at 57%, a very healthy rate, and now makes up 20% of our revenue. Our Cerion banking revenue was virtually negligible last year this time, but now makes up 8% of revenue. And our Cerion CIT application, which is our cash in transit track and trace application, has more than tripled and now generates 4% of revenue. And all of these products are sold on a software as a service or SaaS basis. And so obviously we have robust growth across multiple product lines. As far as revenue growth, these products in total generated 23% over the past 16 quarters. That rate has improved slightly to 25% compound annual growth over the past four quarters. And we were proud to be included on McLean's Canadian Business 500 ranking of Canada's fastest growing companies this year as well. The portion of revenue that is recurring is unchanged at 95%. While you know, all of our solutions are use a SaaS model, there's always a small amount of revenue that comes from custom development enhancements required by customers, which are non-recurring in nature. So that accounts for about 5% of revenue. Let's talk a little bit about the where that growth is originating from. And so for software as a service or SaaS companies, it's important to look at the mix of growth that comes from new customers versus existing. And so of that 25% revenue growth, 40% was attributed to new projects. These would be new customers or entirely new, you know, deployments of products. And 60% was the result of expansion of existing subscriptions. So this would be customers who have already subscribed to, for example, SmartSafe monitoring and have added, you know, additional devices that we're going to monitor. So we think that's a healthy ratio. We also wanted to illustrate that almost all of our new customers are cash and transit companies, and this has changed our customer mix significantly. In the past, most of our customers were banks. Now, cash and transit companies make up the largest part of our client base. This is consistent with the trend of banks outsourcing their cash processing business to cash and transit companies. We chose to focus on cash and transit clients for this reason about 5 years ago, and really just focusing our marketing efforts and you know, education efforts on that cash and transit segment, and you can see the results reflected here today. For a regional analysis, let's note that almost all of our revenue still comes from the U.S. market. It is makes up over 90% of our revenue. But this market continues to be highly consolidated. From a cash services perspective, Brinks did self-reported that they estimate that they have 40% of the market. Garda World has 20%. Loomis has 35%. And the remaining 5% is just independent operators, of which many of those independent operators are our current customers. So we continue to perform quite well in the U.S. market, but we also have active usage in 20 countries worldwide. Some of these countries are in the earlier stages of smart, safe, and recycler deployments, which is the primary product that we're working with internationally. And we are taking a long-term view of them as emerging markets, essentially getting in on the ground floor of their smart, safe, and recycler ecosystem. Well, we're very much focused on revenue growth as well. We want to maintain good cost controls, and we're happy to report that we have healthy margins of 69% gross and 45% operating, and that's an average over the past four quarters. And you can see that that has been relatively stable. From a cash perspective, cash is up 69% to $4.3 million Canadian since our last investor update around the same time last year. We are still free of any debt. And we'll continue to evaluate different strategic investments that we think will maximize shareholder value, that we think that are synergistic with the strengths that we have as a company, and that makes sense for our shareholders and the long-term vision of the company. And I'd like to kind of finish off the formal part of the presentation with, our view of industry, industry trends that we see, and a little bit about how we're positioning ourselves to react to them. So, first, outsourcing from banks to cash and transit companies has been a trend for about the past 10 years, but this appears to be accelerating even more in the last couple of years, and even small banks are entering the fray, meaning the small banks are outsourcing their ATM networks to some of our cash and transit customers, and this is really driving demand for our cash vault systems, and that's reflected in, as we mentioned earlier, the customer mix and the fact that cash and transit companies now make up the largest portion of our client base. And, we are seeing on a worldwide international basis some cases where banks are outsourcing their entire fleets of ATMs to third parties. So, in the past, they might have outsourced only the actual services piece of it, emptying and refilling of the actual ATM device. But in some cases, we're seeing the cash and transit companies actually purchase that network of hardware from the bank and agree to operate it under the bank's brand for a fee. So this is just it's a trend that continues, and we're well positioned to take advantage of it as we do have turnkey systems that allow cash and transit companies to immediately start up a cash vault processing service and a cash in transit service that's automated from end to end. It's integrated from end to end. The other new development this year is the Safe Banking Act. So recreational cannabis is now legal in 11 states. Medical cannabis is legal in 33 states. And up to now, clinics and dispensaries could not bank with large federally regulated banks. So if they're FDIC insured, then their cash could not be deposited with them because it is still illegal from a federal, under federal law. And so the cash from these locations went to small state chartered banks, and these small state chartered banks and credit unions often turn to local and regional cash and transit companies. And again, these cash and transit companies are some of our current customers. And the Safe Banking Act is an effort to open it up a little bit so that it would allow the larger federally regulated banks to participate, participate and service the legal dispensaries and clinics. And so we think this will allow some of our customers to offer new services. And again, we have some turnkey applications for them to use in the space. Cash is heavily or dominantly used for the purchase of cannabis in the U.S. Up to this point, Visa and MasterCard were not available as options because, again, it's illegal at a federal level. So the cash has been the only option to date. So certainly it's a cash-intensive industry. The next part I'd like to mention is a new initiative by the ATM Industry Association. It's called Next Gen ATM. And it's really like a reimagining or reengineering of what an ATM is. So instead of a large device with a screen and a printer and a pin pad, as everyone's accustomed to, what they'd like to see is that the user interact with their smartphone as the interface to the device. So a customer can come up to the ATM or, even in advance, enter into their smartphone that they'd like to withdraw, say, $100 in cash. They'll then walk up to the device, tap their phone onto the ATM, and the device will immediately dispense that amount, but we will already know which account to debit. So they'll just use their online or mobile banking application to really drive the ATM transaction. And this should reduce lines. It should also significantly reduce the cost of the ATMs and improve their reliability, just because there's fewer moving parts, and it's just overall a simpler device. And we joined the ATM Industry Association last year so we could keep ahead of developments in this space. We think it's important because it could drive the next wave of ATM deployments, or it could increase the number of ATMs that are deployed worldwide or in the U.S. And if the number of ATMs increases, then that increases the need for our cash processing software to be able to service them. And we want to take advantage of any integration points that we can to make the transfer of cash to and from that next-gen ATM as seamless as possible through our software systems. The other thing that we find really interesting is small customer-facing recyclers, that these devices are able to dispense as well as accept notes and coins at the point of sale, at the cash register. And they've long been used in Asia, but we're now seeing some of these devices come to North America and Mexico. And it should have some interesting implications. The main advantage of these types of devices is that the cashier never has to touch the cash. The customer approaches the point of sale, places their order. Then if they want to pay in cash, they insert their own notes, and the device dispenses change. So it's similar to a self-checkout in some respects, but the cashier is behind the device at the time of the order. It's very useful in restaurants because whoever's taking an order doesn't have to take off their gloves. Doesn't have to handle dirty money and then go back to handling food. So it has some interesting use cases when combined with the next gen ATM concept, where you could potentially pay for coffee and deposit cash at the same time or withdraw cash at the same time in a single transaction that was driven from your smartphone application. So it's an example of how, you know, cash can continue to be relevant even and just aided by technology in this age. And, you know, of course, we monitor a lot of recyclers in North America. So if there's more devices out there, that could significantly increase the number of units that we monitor and collect data from. Lastly, I'll talk a little bit about wage competition. So the U.S. is operating historically low unemployment rates, as everyone is probably familiar with. We are hearing from our customers, both cash in transit and retail, about how they're having to pay more to attract employees and retain them. And we see this as a key driver in demand for technology. This is not a brand new aspect, but it's certainly the pressure is not reducing. They are having to look at new technology to help reduce their labor costs and make their entire operations more efficient. So cash and transit companies are moving to one-man trucks rather than two-man crews on a vehicle, and they're having to make their routes as efficient as possible. And our cash and transit application facilitates that. So it enforces all of the controls to make sure that even one person can do their job effectively and accurately. But also our software allows them to monitor the routes of their trucks to optimize the order of their stops and the actual physical driving route that they take to help reduce the amount of time that their employees spend on the road, reduce their fuel costs as well. And then retailers are looking at smart, safe, and recycler equipment to, again, reduce the amount of time that managers are spending counting and recounting cash, to reduce the amount of time that employees are spending after their shift balancing out their register. So we think that we're well positioned to benefit from all of these industry trends. Now, I'd like to start with questions and answers, but before we take ones from the callers, I'd like to start with two that were submitted by investor Tom Thiem. And this first question of what are some great questions that investors rarely ask you but should? We thought this was a pretty good question. We had to give it some thought. And we think the best question in this age is what technology could disrupt your business overnight? So just like Uber did to taxi companies and Craigslist did to newspapers, what could immediately impact our business detrimentally? So paper currency is obviously part of our business. It was first used in the 7th century. It was first used in Europe in the 17th century. And so it's had a pretty good run. But as we described in our first slide, there's some very unique aspects to cash. It's instantaneous. You can settle at par, meaning that there's no transaction fees, there's no middleman. It's reliable, durable, it's a resilient transaction, and it's easy to use person to person. So one thing that could ultimately disrupt our business is if someone tomorrow invented some sort of stored value card or chip that was anonymous and allowed instant transfers from person to person without the engagement of a third party and without access to the internet and without access to electricity and without the use of a ledger to record the transaction, then this could conceivably replace cash. This does not exist today. But that's an example of something that could not only disrupt our business, but disrupt the entire cash industry in short order. And so just to be clear, Bitcoin does not meet these criteria because it does require access to a network, and there is a ledger so it is not completely anonymous. And so there's just very few, or there's just really no alternatives that check all of the boxes that Cash does. The other question that Thomas submitted was, what do you think are some of the things that investors misunderstand about the business? And so we think that the greatest misconception is that Cash has already disappeared. And it has to do with the person that asks the question. So if you have money to invest and you own a home and if you have a good credit rating, you probably don't use much cash on a daily basis. But if we look at the U.S., where we have the best statistics, 7% of the adult population does not have a bank account. 20% of the adult population, they do have a bank account, but they still rely on non-bank services such as check cashing, payday loans, et cetera. So if you've wondered why there's so many of those stores, that is why. 1 in 5 adults use them on a semi-regular basis. And so that means that 1 in 4 consumers really do, to some extent, rely on cash, on the availability of cash. And this is one of the reasons that urban jurisdictions are passing laws to force retailers to accept cash. It's also one of the reasons why online retailers like Amazon are trying to figure out ways that they can accept cash. So they've initiatives of paying for things through retail outlets with cash and before they deliver it via your Prime service, or their Amazon Go stores have started to accept cash as a payment method. Originally, they were supposed to be cashless environments, and part of the reason is that these companies are realize that they're locking out 25% of the potential customers. So we think that's probably the biggest misconception about our business is one related to just the use of cash, and it has to do with just that kind of invisibility of just those consumers that are heavily reliant on it. So with that, I will open it up to questions, Catherine.
At this time, if you would like to register to ask a question, please press star and 1 on your touch-tone phone. Again, that's star and 1. You can remove yourself from the question queue at any time by pressing the pound key. We will pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. And as a reminder, that is star and 1 if you would like to ask a question today. We'll take our first question from Matthew Schroeder. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jason. Thank you very much for that presentation. A question about you were saying that you've seen quite a lot of growth from your cash in transit customers and in the banking segment. I believe on the previous investor call, you talked about some of the developments going on in the CIT industry, the consolidation that's going on. There was Brinks and Dunbar getting together. If you could give us some color on how the industry trends, what the industry trends are and how they're impacting NAMCIS, that would be great.
Yeah, so we have not seen any further major acquisitions. The last big one was Brinks and Dunbar. And that acquisition will have benefits for us in that Brinks is an existing customer, so it is an expansion of that subscription revenue from them potentially. What we're seeing as far as the cash and transit industry is that merger in particular generated a lot of churn amongst customer accounts. And so customers that were previously Dunbar customers may not have had a good relationship with Brinks, and that they're looking for, they're looking to alternatives. And so some of those customers are, engaging with some of the smaller regional players and, you know, signing on for their services. We also see that you know, the regional players, they are, you know, they are expanding on a state by state basis. So some of our customers who may have started off in, let's say, you know, Washington are now all the way down the western seaboard. So yeah, we're probably seeing, you know, that industry consolidation has not materialized to the extent that we saw. It's really, you know, kind of ended with that Dunbar acquisition, and we haven't seen much consolidation at the regional level as of yet. At some point, some of these regional players will start to overlap, and you know, they may see some synergies in merging at that point.
Okay, that, thank you very much for that. If I may, I have a couple of questions. I'll ask at least one now and then go perhaps back into the queue. But on one of the previous calls, you also discussed, my question is about, are there any bottlenecks that NAMCIS has or constraints to growth? I remember you talking about being able to get qualified, good engineers. Any color on any bottlenecks that you are experiencing from a corporate standpoint?
Yeah, so good question. Hiring continues to be a challenge. It's a, you know, in Canada, it is also a low unemployment environment, and in particular, finding, you know, qualified engineers for cloud-based operations is uniquely challenging. But we have, you know, we have expanded our staff to meet some of the demands from our customers. So this time last year we were 10 employees. We are now 13 employees, and likely soon 14. So, you know, that staffing has gone up. We have been able to find people. But, you know, it's a matter, as many know, it's a matter of going through literally hundreds of resumes to narrow it down to, you know, a dozen people to end up with one candidate. And so, you know, that process does take time. So it takes us, you know, literally months to find people, to find the right people. So we have to be careful about, of course, who we onboard. But yeah, we've been doing better in that respect, much better than in prior years.
Okay, thank you. I'll go back into the queue if someone else has questions. Thanks.
Thanks, Matthew.
Our next question comes from David Eckenberg. Please go ahead.
Hello. First of all, congratulations for celebrating your 30th year of business, I think.
Yeah, thanks, David.
My question, the question I wanted to ask you is, you mentioned in the previous calls and on your website that your financial performance is closely tied to the one of your customers. Mm-hmm. So how exactly do you bill your customers for each of your services? Is it a fee per transaction, a fee per number of dollars processed? Would appreciate that you provide some details on how your financial performance is tied to one of your customers.
Good question. So all of our customers are billed the same way, and it varies by product, but it's always the same concept. So for our Cerion SmartSafe monitoring application, and maybe I'll flip back to my first slide there. So our Cerion SmartSafe monitoring application, we bill per device per month, and it's a flat fee regardless of the number of transactions performed on that device. And for our Cerion banking application, it is a monthly fee per store that uses the application. Again, not tied to the transaction volume or the amount of the transaction. For the Ethereum Cash in Transit application, it is billed per truck. All of these we bill based on active usage over the prior month, meaning that if the customer's business declines and they take trucks off the road or stores close, their invoice the next month is lower. So it does vary, and hopefully it varies in the opposite way. It goes up. And then at the very end, in currency controller, we bill per teller workstation. So all of these are very closely tied together with the customer's processing capacity. What we want to do is align their interests with ours. So as their business grows, our revenue grows. And so we're incentivized to help them provide new services that can help expand their business and expand their use of the software.
Okay, thanks. May I ask another question?
Sure.
In your October 2018 call, and also in your April 2019 call, you mentioned that there was about 150,000 smart safes in the U.S. So
yeah.
I noticed that number actually hasn't grown from 2018 in October through April 2019. So what's happening now? Do you think the number of smart safes will actually be growing? Or is it something that is pretty much flat in terms of growth?
No, it has grown. So at this point, in time, it's likely that there's closer to 180,000 units in the field. The difficulty is that none of these numbers are public. So it's largely what we do is we collect data from reports and research reports from Celent and G4S and Brinks, and we'll present those, but they are estimates. Certainly the growth of the smart safe market, continues to grow at approximately a 20% year over year rate, and it's maintained that rate for the past 5 or 10 years.
Okay, and one last question. I've noticed that you will be attending a conference in a few weeks,
mm-hmm.
and I've looked at the other companies that are presenting themselves at this conference, and some of them seem to have a similar product offering, similar to what you are offering. For example, SureTrack. I don't know if you've heard about this company, for example.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering what exactly differentiates your products from these other software developers? And what are you doing that these competitors are not doing yet?
Okay. The conference that we're attending is called ICOS, which is an international currency symposium. They have different events in different continents. And the Americas is just one of them. It's in Boston this year. We have attended it in past years. We stopped attending for a couple of years because we didn't find it as beneficial. So we are kind of dipping our toe back in the water by sponsoring it again this year. So to your question of the companies that are attending, NAMSIS does have competitors. We think that's a good thing. If we didn't have any competition, we probably wouldn't have a good market. Giesecke and Devrient is there. They make a competitor to our currency controller application. Likewise, Dularoz is there, and they're through their CPS arm also have a competitor to our cash vault or currency controller application. There is also a company called TransTrack that will be attending, and TransTrack is owned by GND, or by Giesecke and Devrient, and they are very much present in the European marketplace. So, you know, they're, you know, one of the reasons we attend these shows is that we do want to, you know, compare our offerings, and we do want to see what they're doing and who they're talking to. And you know, we want to be present for the, you know, those sessions. So yeah, some of these customers, they do have products that are competitive with ours. SureTrax in particular is a bit of a unique case. So we develop all of SureTrax's products. So SureTrax is a rebrands our Sirion CIT application under their SureTrax CITS application. So if you look on their website, the screenshots of the applications will look identical. And likewise, their SureTrax DT software and SureTrax change order software, CO software, is our Sirion banking application. And our relationship with SureTrax is that they are a non-exclusive reseller of our applications. And, you know, they're helping to build the market for our products and you know, educate customers out there. But also, you know, they are leveraging some existing relationships they have to get the product into, you know, try to get the product into large banks and retailers.
Okay, thanks, Jason.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Vikhtal Patel with ECI. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. Good morning, gentlemen. And this is Vipul Patel. Congratulations on a good set of numbers. Most of my questions are answered, but I do have a couple of them, Matt.
Okay.
So first question is, in the past, you mentioned that you have been working on route optimization software for cash carrier vehicle. Can you please share progress on that, and what kind of revenue potential do you expect in future?
Yeah, so the route optimization, we have we did try different a couple of different approaches, but we settled on partnering and using technology from a company called ArcGIS, which is an established vendor for route optimization. And their latest software, basically that was released earlier this year, checked a lot of the boxes that we needed that are unique to armored carrier delivery that weren't supported in the past. And so you know, we are beta testing it still with two cash and transit companies in urban areas. And you know, so far the results look very, very good. You know, the use of route optimization for armored carriers, you know, what we've learned is that the use case is a little bit constrained to, you know, urban areas. So an armored carrier operating in, so, you know, suburbs or, you know, small cities is very different than operating in major centers like, you know, Dallas or Houston or and even in, like, Chicago is different than Dallas, and Dallas is different than Omaha. And so we are learning as we go there. But you know, some of the carriers that are using the beta version of it you know, are getting good results so far.
Okay. Thank you. And next question is on the ATMIA, next generation ATM standard. So in the past, you mentioned that, you know, like the ATM, next generation ATM feature where you tap the phone and request $200 to withdraw. And if user goes to ATM, and ATM will just dispense cash. So you mentioned you already, because you already are in ATM cash processing software, so you can leverage existing software to fit in the next-gen ATM feature. Can you please provide some updates or progress on that?
Yeah, so what we want to do as part of the next-gen ATM piece is to, because for, it is a developing standard. This isn't, we're not going to see products come out of this industry consortium for probably another 12 to 18 months at least. But the, one of the reasons we want to be there is so that we know in advance what to expect from these types of devices, and to make sure that we can integrate with any kind of data that these devices output. So, for example, on a traditional ATM right now, when the cash is emptied, when the residual cash, like the leftover cash, is emptied from the device, it will be delivered to a cash processing center that may run our currency controller application. And the data, so the transaction for balancing that ATM starts by identifying the ATM via a paper receipt, and then entering in the amount of dispensed cash, again, from a paper receipt. And what we need to be prepared for is, if these devices don't have printers on them, how are we going to know where that cash came from, and how much are we going to know what the amount of cash to expect? And that's what we want to have a early visibility into. As well, if there's anything that we can do to help service these ATMs in the field with our cash in transit application, that could potentially make servicing the more efficient, and would increase demand for our cash in transit application. So the unique nature of the device just has some implications on the back end, as well as the servicing perspective that we want to be aware of. And we don't think that there's necessarily an opportunity for monitoring the devices themselves. Those types of systems tend to be very manufacturer specific. But that's something we've got our eye on as well, just because there is some overlap with smart safe and recycler technology.
Thank you very much for detailed color on that. And now, this is the last question that I have. So company generates revenue from a couple of streams like hosted service, licenses, and services. Is it safe to assume that all the revenues from hosted service are recurring revenue? If not, then what percentage of revenues are recurring in nature versus one time? Thank you.
So all of our new sales are sold on a recurring basis. We do have some legacy sales. We have customers that have been with us for 20 years. We're very glad to have them. And, those customers pay us a maintenance fee that's a percentage of the value of the product. And that is, paid on an annual basis. And, we do count that as recurring revenue as well. So our maintenance revenue is recurring. The recurring revenue for the other products, for our other subscription-based products like our Syrian applications or currency controller, are based on active usage. So unless the customer cancels the contract or their usage goes down to zero, we expect that revenue to continue on. But it is dynamic. It is variable in nature. So it is it is subject to change. All contracts, are between 1 and 3 years. That locks in pricing, but it doesn't normally lock them into a minimum number of units. So it is a pure software as a service subscription in that respect.
Okay. Thank you. That's all from my end.
Thank you, Vitu.
As a reminder, that's star and one if you would like to ask a question today. And we'll now go to Matthew Schroeder. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jason, again. Just a very quick last question about NAMCIS is in an enviable position with about, I think the number was $4.3 million in cash on the balance sheet, up nicely from the previous year. My question is one of capital allocation. How for potential acquisitions or whatever you're looking at, what type of criteria are you using or what is your evaluation process? And the nature of my question is for a company that is accumulating cash, there's sometimes a temptation to go out and buy something. And I'm just trying to understand how you're going about that process. Thank you.
Yeah, there's several factors that we're considering when evaluating companies. So the first one is size. So of course, we're still a small company ourselves, and so acquisitions become that much more selective because we're not going to be purchasing or acquiring someone larger than ourselves. We don't want to make a large, leveraged transaction. So that's a big component. I mean, that narrows the field down significantly. But we also we want someone that has an established track record of success, whose customers at least somewhat align with ours, whether that's, retail, logistics, or banking. Their customer base is important. The other aspect that's really important to us is technology. So, NAMCIS is a Java-based shop, so Java is a programming language, and it doesn't make as much sense to acquire a company who operates on a Microsoft C# based platform, just because there's less opportunity to transfer knowledge to get some synergies and reduce costs. The other aspect to it is not only the programming language technology, but the cloud technology, right? So we're on the Amazon cloud. So ideally, it's beneficial to have someone else who's also on the Amazon cloud. And certainly, at a very minimum, we want someone who is cloud oriented at the least, meaning that they have at least some solutions that currently operate on the public cloud. Amazon is ideal, but just in general, operating on a public cloud and as a as a subscription or software as a service basis makes the most sense for us. So that should give you kind of an idea of what we're looking at. But that should also illustrate that the filter is pretty fine too, and it makes finding and evaluating them a little bit harder. But we want to be very careful to allocate that capital wisely.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Tom McComb. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for taking my question. I'm just wondering, with CIT or with your smart safes, what is sort of the rate of adoption with your existing relationships? For instance, are you in every truck that they put on the road with CIT, or for every smart safe that they put out, is it your software? So take Brinks for an example. Is it are you totally integrated, or is there room to grow with the existing relationships?
Good question. So I'll start with the CIT or cash in transit deployments. So one of the unique aspects there is that cash in transit is a bit of a closed loop. So you might have one truck that picks up at a customer, comes back to the depot at the end of the day. They sort that bag just like they sort packages in a FedEx facility. And then that bag will be loaded onto a second truck the next day for delivery to the customer. And they'll do pickups that need to be delivered the opposite way. And this will happen across, you know, dozens of vehicles and routes. And so with our CIT application, that is actually one of the challenges in rolling it out, is that it is very much an all or nothing proposition. There's very little value or even negative value in putting one out of 20 trucks on our application. Really, the value is you do all 20. And that's so that the work and deliveries flow seamlessly through from one truck to another. And we even have scenarios where a truck meets another truck, you know, in a parking garage or, you know, some private facility, and they'll exchange work, you know, on the fly on the road. Or trucks that deliver to airports where a flight delivers it to another truck. So certainly the value is in that all or nothing investment for the customer. So we don't see any partial deployments of our software. The only instance of that is if they do have multiple branches. Branch operations in three major cities, we can roll out one city at a time. So we don't have to roll out their entire enterprise, but certainly within a given vicinity, we need to deploy everything at once. For the smart safes, there is value in having us as a singular universal dashboard. So if you were if you're a smart safe network operator, like a Burroughs, for example, or they're a service provider that deploys ATM or deploys smart safe hardware plus manages the data transmissions to the bank, it's very beneficial for you to use a single Cirion, NAMSA Cirion application rather than three or four different solutions. It just significantly decreases the management effort. You know, all of a sudden, you can use one application to manage thousands of ATMs versus, you know, a dozen different applications from different manufacturers or different vendors. But, you know, that said, we do have some customers that are currently running, two systems in parallel with plans to migrate devices over to our Cirion application. So, one of the reasons they're doing that is that we have, you know, when we have 90% of their safes, you know, that extra 10% just makes sense to put it onto our platform. So one of our strategies is to, build that beachhead of devices so that it makes sense to put them on our dashboard first. I hope that answers your question.
Yep, that's exactly it. Thank you.
And we'll now go to David Eckenberg. Your line is open.
Hi again, Jason. Another question here. I'm just wondering, how vulnerable is your business to cyber attacks, and how well are you shielding your products from cyber attacks? Like, I'd like to know if you could give an idea of how much capital is required spending to ensure cyber protection for your whole network of softwares, especially as it is growing forward. Is it some sort of fixed fee that you have to pay, or does your expenditure grow as your business scales in terms of cyber protection?
Yeah, Ed, that's a good question. So first of all, we use the Amazon Cloud, which is well regarded for security. They have not had a major security breach to date, and you know the public cloud is the most attacked infrastructure in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Approximately 30% of the websites that you might use on a daily basis are in the Amazon cloud, including Netflix and Lyft and all other sorts of services. And so certainly their security infrastructure needs to be paramount. And we really do leverage everything that they provide as far as security capability. So we use Amazon's firewall. We use their intrusion detection systems for automated alerting. We subscribe to their extended support services so that, you know, any problems that come up, we can get resolved as quickly as possible. And we use all of their patching solutions to make sure that all of our systems are always up to date with the latest security patches. And then we have we use a product that they call Amazon Config to make sure that all of our systems are always compliant, that we are observing all of our own roles, for example, for encryption of data at rest as well as over the wire in transit. So we leverage a lot of their technology in order to help mitigate the risk there. And then from a coding perspective, we train our developers in OWASP and SANS guidelines, which is a bit technical, but those are standard sort of guidelines of best practices for secure coding. And then we use a static code analysis tool to try to find security flaws before they actually get deployed. And we use dynamic web application testing so that we're constantly running tests on a daily basis against known hack attempts or known hack procedures to make sure that we're not vulnerable. So that's critical as well. And then at the very end, we do annual penetration testing on our system. So we use outside vendors for that. And they get sort of behind the curtain access to our applications and try to find, they spend a week or two trying to find vulnerabilities in our applications and or just make general suggestions of how we can do things to improve our security. So it is a multifaceted effort. I don't think we've ever added up all the costs to it, but certainly, there's a fee for all of the Amazon services, security monitoring and intrusion detection and prevention. There is fees for our dynamic web application security testing. And there are fees for, we do have cyber intelligence, or cyber attack insurance, as part of our overall insurance coverage. There's a specific cost for that as well. A lot of these things are relatively fixed, which is important to note. So it doesn't really matter how big a system or how much volume a system is processing. The tests of whether that system are secure are done on a per system basis. So these fees don't necessarily go up, and the risk doesn't necessarily go up with more activity or more revenue.
Okay, thanks.
And once again, that is star and one if you would like to ask a question today. We will pause for a brief moment to allow any further questions to queue. It does appear that we have no further questions at this time.
All right. Well, thank you for all those questions. They were all very good and very well informed. I hope I was able to answer them to your satisfaction. Thank you for taking the time to hear more about the company, our products, and operations. And certainly, if you have any questions that you come up with after, please don't hesitate to email myself or Barry Sparks. We'll be happy to answer you.